The second case for oral argument this morning is Sioux Valley Park Partners et al. Appellants versus Mark A. Weitzel, M.D. Appellee. Should point out, if any of you arrived after the first argument, we have several publications that you might wish to pick up in the lobby. They're free. One is a photographic history of the South Dakota Supreme Court. The list of oral argument cases for this term, plus a description of some terms that we use at the appellate level and brief biographies of the justices, and then the blue-covered book is a written description of how our judicial system works in South Dakota. The second case, Justice Sabers has disqualified himself, and the court had originally appointed the Honorable Lori Wilbur, judge from the Sixth Circuit, to sit in Justice Sabers' place. Tragically, her husband passed away last week, and I know I speak for the entire Supreme Court and the UJS when we extend our sympathy to Judge Wilbur, Paige, and Molly Wilbur. And Brent Wilbur will be missed. He argued many cases in front of this court, and as I publicly stated last week, he was a lawyer's lawyer. Because Lori Wilbur could not participate for that reason, Judge Yang from Yankton graciously at the last minute agreed to fill in, and we appreciate that, Judge Yang. Thank you. And Justice Zinner will be participating in this case, but he is not physically present here. He will be listening to the oral arguments and has read the briefs and will be conferencing with us on this case tomorrow. He isn't also involved in the funeral this morning as a pallbearer. For the appellants, Sioux Valley Heart Partners would be Roberto Lang, and I understand, Mr. Lang, you'll be doing 15 minutes, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice.
And then Mr. Eric Schulte, you'll be doing the final 5 minutes?
Yes.
All right. And then Mr. Lang, you'll do the rebuttal, correct? Okay. And for the appellee, Mr. James Moore, an attorney from Sioux Falls, correct? Okay. With that, Mr. Lang, you may proceed, counsel, and you have 15 minutes.
May it please the court and counsel, the circuit court erred when it granted summary judgment to Dr. Weitzel, awarding contract damages that amount to in excess of $170,000 with prejudgment interest, and additionally in granting Dr. Weitzel complete loan forgiveness on loans that Sioux Valley had made to him that total approximately $240,000. I'm going to address the issues as they concern the unpaid notes, and Mr. Schulte will address the contract issues. The history on the notes is undisputed largely. Before Dr. Weitzel became employed with Sioux Valley in April of 1999, there were two notes extended to him, totaling $50,000. One he used to repay his own med school debts, and the other he used for personal debts. While he was employed with Sioux Valley, he asked for and received another loan of $189,000 in April of 2000. In July of 2000, he and Sioux Valley negotiated and entered into a replacement demand note for slightly in excess of $200,000. At that time, he also received another support loan that paid him $36,000 in $3,000 increments while he was away at a fellowship at the University of Minnesota. The language of the notes are clear. They are demand notes that require his payment on demand or, if no demand is made, in 48 installments in the future beginning in August of 2001. Dr. Weitzel, when questioned about these notes and why he had not repaid them, during his deposition gave the excuse that demand had not been made. It had not been requested. When he was asked if the money was requested, would you pay the note? His response was, would I have a choice? Ordinarily, summary judgment is appropriate when notes are unpaid under the Dale versus Pelton case and First National Bank versus Felt case. In this case, not Dr. Weitzel's explanation, but the explanation of extremely capable and inventive counsel for Dr. Weitzel, is that he can avail himself of what's called the prevention doctrine. Now, there are four reasons, indeed more, but four reasons I'll address why the prevention doctrine does not apply here. This court has once addressed the prevention doctrine in Johnson versus Koss. In that case, this court made clear that the prevention doctrine is to excuse non-performance of a condition precedent. It requires the presence of a condition precedent to be applicable. And of course, a condition precedent, as the Johnson case notes, is a fact or event which must exist or take place before there is a right to performance. The obligation must be made immediately to depend upon the condition precedent. Under the loans and the July 14, 2000 agreement, reemployment of Dr. Weitzel was not made a condition precedent to Dr. Weitzel repaying the notes. In the Johnson case, there is an example of a condition precedent where it is required that Ford approve the transfer of the franchise that was at issue in Johnson versus Koss, actually written into the agreement as a condition precedent. Here, there is nothing like that in any of these agreements. Second of all, the doctrine is misapplied here by the circuit court and by the arguments made by Dr. Weitzel. The Morton Buildings case, the Kansas case, and the Sullivan case cited by Dr. Weitzel and Idaho case discuss the fact that traditionally the conduct that must exist for there to be prevention doctrine application is conduct that is not permitted by the contract. Or excuse me, it cannot be contract, or I botched that. Let me try that again, and I'll quote it. The prevention doctrine does not apply when actions taken by the party allegedly hindering performance are actions which are permitted by the contract. Under Dr. Weitzel's version of the facts, the contract that he says exists, the agreement to agree, allowed Sioux Valley to terminate Dr. Weitzel upon 90 days notice or immediately if Sioux Valley paid him 90 days of base pay, not loan forgiveness, but 90 days of base pay. The conduct that Dr. Weitzel says Sioux Valley improperly undertook was to terminate him by not welcoming him back from his fellowship. If that's the case, then contract damages may apply, but the doctrine of prevention does not trigger loan forgiveness. Third, as recognized in the Johnson versus Koss case, the application of the prevention doctrine is a question of fact. The Johnson case says that it is a question of fact to be determined by the jury under all the proved fact and circumstances. Here, looking at the facts on the notes in the light most favorable of Sioux Valley, as this court must, there clearly are questions of fact that exist on whether Sioux Valley prevented performance. First of all, I think it is clear under these notes that there were two ways that Dr. Weitzel could perform. He could come back and work for the four-year period and have the debt forgiven in equal increments out of what he was earning with taxes withheld, or he could pay them off in their entirety. There was nothing Sioux Valley did to prevent Dr. Weitzel from paying off these notes in their entirety. And indeed, there's a question of fact that exists on whether Sioux Valley even prevented him from returning. If the court will recollect from the timeline, in the spring of 2001, Kim Patrick, the attorney for Sioux Valley, and Steve Sanford, the attorney for Dr. Weitzel, were talking about the situation with Dr. Weitzel being gone on a fellowship and the fact that while he was gone, a cardiologist had expressed the strong preference that he not return.
Well, didn't he say, I thought he said, he's not coming back?
Justice Koenig-Camp, Steve Sanford said that Kim Patrick told him that if Dr. Weitzel came back, Sioux Valley would likely exercise the right of termination.
Okay, but the decision maker behind that was the physician who did the hiring and firing. And that physician did say that he's not coming back. Is that right?
Dr. Nickel is the physician you're referring to. Right. He said during his deposition, Justice Konenkamp, that based on the conversation with the cardiologist, Dr. Weitzel, in his mind, would not return to Sioux Valley.
And it was his decision to make, though.
It was Dr. Nickel's decision to make. Yes, he had hiring and firing power. Now, what's important is what occurred next. Dr. Nickel, in his deposition, said, I then turned it over to Kim Patrick because I realized it was a contract matter. Dr. Nickel did not communicate with either Steve Sanford or with Dr. Weitzel. Kim Patrick took over the communications with Steve Sanford, the attorney for Dr. Weitzel. And Dr. Weitzel did not talk with anyone directly about what was...
But couldn't the court, looking at Dr. Nickel's deposition, couldn't the court say the decision had been made? Now, granted, Mr. Patrick may have nuanced or sanitized that decision and conveyed it in different words, but isn't it clear in the record that Dr. Nickel, who was the decision maker, indicated that Dr. Weitzel was not going to be coming back?
I believe that is less than clear in the record, Justice Konenkamp, because of taking Dr. Nickel's testimony in full, I think fairly. He said, it was then I went to Kim Patrick and said, sort this out. This is a contract matter. And indeed, as was noted in Judge Caldwell's initial opinion, that didn't foreclose him from returning in a different capacity, albeit he would not have been happy, I'm sure, returning in a capacity other than as a Heart Partners doctor. And also, during the conversations between Kim Patrick and Steve Sanford, Kim Patrick noted, as indicated in his supplemental affidavit, that it's possible for Weitzel to return, albeit subject to a code of conduct, and there were discussions that were ongoing. What is interesting about this is while the discussions between Mr. Patrick and Mr. Sanford continue into May of 2001, indeed with a letter dated May 31, 2001 from Kim Patrick saying we are not terminating Dr. Weitzel, at the same time, Dr. Weitzel, unbeknownst to Sioux Valley, is applying for other cardiology positions in Oklahoma, Nebraska, Wisconsin in April of 2001, and by the end of April of 2001 has accepted a position in Oklahoma where he's earning essentially the equivalent of what he would be making at Sioux Valley. So he had actually made the decision to leave before the discussions between Mr. Patrick and Mr. Sanford played out.
Now, there's been a lot of discussion about the phone calls and the letters between Patrick and Sanford, but did your client initiate any internal measures to terminate Dr. Weitzel?
No, Your Honor. Indeed, Sioux Valley carried him on the life insurance program, carried him on the health insurance program throughout the time he was gone at the fellowship. I believe the testimony is in the record, although not in the statement of undisputed facts. His name was still on the door at the practice. The loan of $3,000 per month continued. So there was no internal action, albeit Dr. Nickel did indicate that there were discussions internally. And there was a request that the cardiologist put in writing why they did not want Dr. Weitzel to return.
Thank you.
The fourth reason that the prevention doctrine ought not to apply is that it doesn't make sense under these circumstances to apply it. If we take a step back from this case and just think about what makes sense. We have Dr. Weitzel here arguing that he was prevented, that it was made impossible to him to repay these notes, totaling $240,000. Meanwhile, he's in Oklahoma earning in excess of $400,000 a year as a cardiologist. Sioux Valley did nothing to render it impossible for him to repay notes. He has not reported the notes as income to him. He has not earned the notes, admittedly. This wasn't a gift, this was a loan. These were loans. And the effect of applying the prevention doctrine, especially when coupled with the contract remedy, is doubling up on damages here. Of course, damages are meant to compensate a non-breaching party for the breach. They're not meant to punish the other party. Here, if Dr. Weitzel's position is believed that there was a binding agreement that incorporated the 90-day termination provision, his contract damages, and indeed it's admitted by Dr. Weitzel, his contract damages are the 90 days of base pay, which the circuit court awarded. His contract damages aren't an additional $240,000 that were given to him. If you think about the prevention doctrine from this perspective, and this is the textbook case of it.
You have two minutes left,
so I better go on to a different point. I wanted to talk briefly about the events of default basis that the circuit court used, also in excusing the notes. Section 5 of the July 14, 2000 agreement does say that any of the following shall be a default under the agreement and the notes. And the argument of Weitzel is that he didn't default. Subsection A says the physician shall fail to pay as and when demanded or otherwise due any installment or principal or interest. That is a default. The loans have been demanded to be repaid. Sioux Valley filed a counterclaim in this case, and Weitzel has not paid. So he clearly has defaulted under Section 5A that renders it a default if he shall fail to pay when demanded the notes. I will now defer to Mr. Schulte on the other issues.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lang. Mr. Schulte, you have 5 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, I would like to address the contract issues, as Mr. Lang alluded to, specifically two issues addressed by the circuit court. Initially, the ruling by Judge Caldwell in 2003, finding that there was a binding contract for future employment as a matter of law. And second, the subsequent ruling by the circuit court in the summer of 2005, finding that Sioux Valley had breached this contract as a matter of law and that there were absolutely no material fact questions in dispute. In regard to the first ruling, which was in the summer of 2003, Sioux Valley respectfully submits that instead of a contract, a binding contract for future employment, that instead it was an unenforceable agreement to agree. This court has said on several occasions, I believe most recently in the estate of Fisher, and I believe going back to 1968 in the Lyndon Kugel brothers case, words to the effect that agreements to agree are not enforceable. And in this particular situation, what needs to be examined is the four corners of the July 14th, 2000 agreement. There are sections in that particular agreement which are contractual, I believe are binding and enforceable. There is a provision finding that Dr. Weitzel's employment with Sioux Valley is terminated as of that date. There are provisions that would take the various loans that he had and consolidate them under the terms of this agreement. So there are terms that are binding, but I believe if you would examine the provision regarding future employment, it constitutes an agreement to agree, which is not enforceable.
How do you distinguish this from the Ziegler case that we just handed down here a month ago?
The Ziegler case, which was decided very recently, which pertained to the sale of a furniture business and funeral home, I think is different. And the distinction that I see is in that particular case, there was the case from the New York Federal District Court, which was cited, the teacher's insurance case. And that case addresses two different kinds of cases where there are preliminary negotiations or agreements. One set of cases, which is outlined in that case, are cases that are so clear that the preliminary agreement is going to be binding and enforceable that you then, in fact, enforce it. The other end of the spectrum of cases are cases where there are certain loose ends that need to be tied up, where I believe obligations do not arise until the parties actually execute the written contract. And I think the question really is, which side does this case fall on? I would submit, Your Honor, that it falls on the side of the case where there are additional loose ends that need to be tied up. The agreement states that upon Dr. Weitzel's return, thank you, Your Honor, he will execute the then-existing staff-physician agreement. I would respectfully request the court to review the one agreement that's in the record. It's 8 pages long. It contains 20 different sections pertaining to what fees will be charged, the definition of the duties and responsibilities of the physician, a non-compete section. And I would just respectfully submit that I think it's wrong to assume that there would simply be no negotiations upon his return after coming back from the fellowship. With my limited time, I want to address briefly the remaining contract issues, if I may. The circuit court found as a matter of law that Sioux Valley breached the July 14th of 2000 agreement and that there were no facts in dispute. First, I believe that's erroneous because of what Mr. Lang previously alluded to concerning the testimony of Dr. Nickel. Dr. Nickel says, on one hand, as you indicated, Justice Konenkamp, that a decision was made, but on page 41 of that same deposition, he indicates that I viewed it as a contractual matter for Mr. Patrick to work out. In addition, paragraph 16 of Mr. Patrick's supplemental affidavit also indicates that he was providing various proposals to Mr. Sanford, Dr. Weitzel's lawyer, regarding proposals to return. In addition, as we've argued in the brief, it is undisputed that the discussions regarding this issue were done solely by the counsel of record. There was never a statement ever made to Dr. Weitzel that he could not return. In fact, we have highlighted in our brief the letter verbatim that was sent by Mr. Patrick in May of 2001 to Mr. Sanford, which specifically says that the contract is not going to be terminated. Despite these facts, the circuit court found that there were absolutely no questions of material fact and that the contract was breached as a matter of law. I would respectfully submit that that was erroneous and request respectfully that the court reverse that decision.
Thank you, Mr. Schulte.
Thank you.
Mr. Moore, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I'm James Moore on behalf of Mark Weitzel, who's currently practicing cardiology in Oklahoma City. I think this is a simple contract case and that all of the principles that govern disposition of the case derive from contract law. And I think that the position that Sioux Valley wants you to take is that Dr. Weitzel, who had an employment contract with Sioux Valley Hospital, went out and got himself an excellent lawyer in Sioux Falls, Steve Sanford, and together with Mr. Sanford's help, he negotiated a contract, the one dated July 14 of 2000, that terminated his employment with Sioux Valley Hospital, that left him indebted to Sioux Valley Hospital in the amount of $200,000 plus, that sent him off to do a fellowship in interventional cardiology that he needed to do only for the purpose of obtaining credentialing privileges at Sioux Valley Hospital, and that he did all of that without guaranteeing himself a right to return to Sioux Valley Hospital. Jumping off of what Mr. Schulte was arguing, I don't think there's any authority that certain provisions of the agreement dated July 14 of 2000 are enforceable while other provisions are not enforceable. The reason that Sioux Valley has taken that position is because it's inconsistent. It wants to argue on the one hand that Dr. Weitzel was in default of the agreement and the notes were therefore due because he did not return. On the other hand, they want to argue that he had no right to return in the first place. Justice Konenkamp, I think the record is crystal clear about Dr. Nichols' decision. When I started this case and took it over from Steve Sanford, who initially started the case and then withdrew because he perceived that he would be a witness in the case, I was hoping to find some documents that would explain the basis for the decision that was eventually communicated to Dr. Weitzel through Mr. Sanford by Mr. Patrick. I didn't find a document. What I found was Dr. Nickel, whose testimony was candid and clear. And Dr. Nickel said exactly this, pages 39 and 40 of his deposition. Question, did you make a decision that Dr. Weitzel was not coming back to the group? Answer, based on the meeting with Heart Partners, I made the decision that Dr. Weitzel would not return to the Sioux Valley Clinic.
But do we get to consider that? Because apparently that was not communicated to your client.
It was communicated as clear as day to Mr. Sanford that Dr. Weitzel was not welcome to return to Sioux Valley Hospital.
As I understood it, though, it was much more nuanced, something like it would be better for everyone if he found someplace else to work.
That's pretty much what Mr. Patrick says in his letter to Mr. Sanford. Mr. Sanford was clear in his conversations with Mr. Patrick that Dr. Weitzel was not welcome back. Your Honor, even what Mr. Patrick communicated is a breach of the agreement. The agreement is crystal clear that Dr. Weitzel has a right to return to Sioux Valley Hospital on August 1 of 2001, and in fact is in default if he does not return.
I mean, isn't it one thing to say you're not coming back, and another thing to say, well, it may be better for you not to come back?
I don't think in this context, Your Honor, not where Dr. Weitzel has negotiated an agreement that specifically provides him with the right to return, and then Sioux Valley tells him, well, we're not really sure you should. Maybe you should go do something else. We won't consider you in default, although the consequence of default is that the notes are due, and we're still going to ask that the notes be repaid.
Well, obviously, the court didn't think there was a problem with it. The court granted summary judgment.
Correct.
Isn't it more properly an issue for a jury to decide the difference between those two comments, you're not coming back, and it's better for you not to come back?
Given Dr. Nichols' testimony, Your Honor, I don't think so. And there are two additional things I would say about his testimony. One is that I asked him, what role did the contract play in your decision? And he said, none. It wasn't a consideration for me. My interest was what was best for Heart Partners. Keep in mind that the cardiologists who used to practice at Sioux Valley Hospital had left North Central Heart and formed the Heart Hospital of South Dakota. Sioux Valley was trying to build a heart practice, and Dr. Nichols said, that's what matters most to me, not what's in the contract. Then go look at the contract, which is in the appendix to my brief, and if you look at the last page of the contract, it bears the signature of Mark Weitzel and, on behalf of Sioux Valley Physician Partners, Michael Nichol, M.D. Dr. Nichol, who signed the agreement that gave Dr. Weitzel a clear contractual right to return, said, I made the decision he wasn't coming back, and it wasn't a consideration for me what the contract says. But that's breach of contract.
How can you say as a matter of law there's a breach of contract when he is still on the payroll, his name is still on the front door, and he's still getting medical benefits?
Because
isn't that a greater question of fact?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Had Sioux Valley terminated the stipend, there clearly would have been a breach of the agreement dated July 14 of 2000. Dr. Nichol handed Mr. Patrick a hot potato when he said, Weitzel's not coming back, you deal with it. And I don't think that Mr. Patrick did a bad job in the way he tried to negotiate with Mr. Sanford, but I don't think that alters the underlying facts, that the decision by the decision maker with authority is that Dr. Weitzel was not coming back, and that is exactly what happened. That is the result that was obtained, and it is clearly contrary to the express provisions of the contract dated July 14 of 2000.
But since no notice had been given to your client of that decision, if Dr. Nichol had changed his mind the next week and said, well, maybe we want him back after all.
Your Honor, I think the notice that was given to Mr. Sanford put Dr. Weitzel in an absolutely impossible situation. He could either go and find employment somewhere else based on Mr. Patrick's comment that maybe you should go do something else, despite his contractual right to return, and risk Sioux Valley claiming that he was in default because he didn't return and the notes were still due, or Dr. Weitzel could come back to Sioux Valley and have his employment terminated with the consequences that would have for him professionally in terms of obtaining other employment. We go back to the breach of the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing, Your Honor, and Judge Teedy did not decide the case on that basis because he found a breach of contract as a matter of law based on Dr. Nichols' testimony. But I think that the cases are clear in South Dakota that what Mr. Patrick tried to do through Mr. Sanford in terms of conveying Dr. Nichols' clear message to Dr. Weitzel was a breach of the implied duty of good faith and fair dealing.
Help me with the timing. Your opponent says that your client was actually looking for other work before the information that he was not going to be coming back was conveyed to him.
The conversation started in, according to the testimony of both Mr. Patrick and Mr. Sanford, there was a meeting of the Heart Partners physicians at some point in January or February when they conveyed to Dr. Nichol that they did not want Dr. Weitzel to return. There was an email dated February 28 of 2000, discussing the reasons that the physicians did not want Dr. Weitzel to return. Mr. Sanford testified that he recalls Mr. Patrick making an initial call to him sometime in January or February. He has a letter that is in the record dated
it's in the briefs.
Mr. Sanford's letter is dated April 12 of 2001, and at that point he says, Dear Kim, as I advised you by phone, this matter cannot come to a peaceful end on the terms you proposed. I mean, it's clear from Mr. Sanford's letter that he's preparing for litigation at this point with Sioux Valley, based on the conversations that had previously taken place. And as he says in the second sentence, as a practical matter, the timing of our discussions is such that Mark was too late to obtain alternate employment of the same kind and character as his employment with Sioux Valley, and which would have commenced at the time called for in his employment agreement with Sioux Valley. Sioux Valley's complaining, Your Honor, that once Mr. Patrick said maybe you should do something else, that Dr. Weitzel, in fact, did exactly that. There is no evidence in the record that he undertook any job search before it was communicated to him through Mr. Sanford by Mr. Patrick that Sioux Valley did not want him to come back. I think that's clear. With respect to the issue about enforceability of the notes, it's integrally tied to the matters related to the contract in two ways. One is that the prevention doctrine, I think, is essentially a principle that says a party who prevents another party's performance of a contract cannot be heard to complain that the other party has not performed. And secondly, I think that it's a contractual matter because, as Judge Teedy found, for the notes to be due and payable, there had to be an event of default. And Mr. Lang can state that the notes were demand notes, but the agreement is quite clear that the notes are governed by the terms of the agreement dated July 14 of 2000. If you look at the concluding sentence of paragraph 1 of the agreement, it says, and this is with respect to the support loan, the $3,000 a month that was paid to Dr. Weitzel while he was doing the fellowship, the support loan shall be subject to all of the provisions of this agreement. The concluding paragraph of sentence of paragraph 2 says the replacement note and the loans evidence thereby shall be subject to all of the provisions of this agreement. When you go to paragraph 6, it says prior to or in the absence of any event of default hereunder, Sioux Valley shall make no demand on any of the notes. The events of default are listed in paragraph 5, and they are principally that Dr. Weitzel fails to return. If you look at the events of default, they're all phrased in terms of Dr. Weitzel's conduct, what Dr. Weitzel does or does not do. Dr. Weitzel fails to return. Dr. Weitzel gives notice that he's not coming back. Dr. Weitzel fails to remain at Sioux Valley until August 1 of 2005, the four-year period for repayment of the notes, or Dr. Weitzel files bankruptcy proceedings.
How do you reconcile that, though, with the 90-day notice provision where either side could terminate the agreement?
Well, I think that limits the contractual damages, Your Honor. I don't think it's relevant with respect to the notes, because as Judge Teedy found, there was no event of default. The fact that Sioux Valley could terminate Dr. Weitzel's employment without cause on 90 days notice would not make the notes due and payable under the clear default provisions of paragraph 5. But the other point, Your Honor, is that it's not what happened in this case. Sioux Valley did not say to Dr. Weitzel, we don't want you to come back. We're going to pay you 90 days salary. You can go on your way, but you owe us the notes. That isn't what happened. Sioux Valley took the much more, we like to call it nuanced in this context, but I don't think that's a particularly appropriate term when you view it from Dr. Weitzel's perspective. He had a contractual right to return that he negotiated at the time he left to do the fellowship. He was being deprived of that opportunity to come back, and now Sioux Valley's saying, but you owe us the notes anyway. With respect to I lost my train of thought. There was one other thing you said that I wanted to respond to. I would point out to the court that I think there are two that there is at least one helpful case, and that is the Cartez decision from North Dakota that involved similar facts, where a party heading off to complete a medical program had loans advanced by a hospital for the purpose of completing that education, contingent they would be forgiven contingent upon him coming back to work at the hospital. He presented himself for employment at the conclusion of his education. The hospital didn't hire him and said, by the way, you owe us the money back. He said, clearly I don't. The reason I don't is because I was ready to come back and you wouldn't take me back. And the North Dakota Supreme Court said the hospital prevented him from performing his part of the agreement, which was continued employment. And I think it's very important to keep in mind that the notes that we're talking about are structured as forgivable loans for the benefit of Sioux Valley Hospital. They were compensation is what they were. They were compensation to Dr. Weitzel in the form of forgivable loans for Sioux Valley's benefit. And Paul Ebmeyer's testimony is very clear about this.
Why is that a benefit to Sioux Valley?
Well, one, it has something to do with some statute that I can't explain to the court and tax reasons. But secondly, Your Honor, it's a benefit to Sioux Valley Hospital, and this is the part I do understand and that makes perfect sense to me, because Sioux Valley wants to provide Dr. Weitzel with incentive to remain employed at the hospital. And the reason that it incentivizes him to stay there is because the loans are forgiven during his continued employment. The benefit to Sioux Valley is we want Dr. Weitzel to be employed here. When Sioux Valley says, why don't you go work somewhere else, Sioux Valley's given up the benefit that they negotiated through those forgivable loans, which is Dr. Weitzel's continued employment. And under those facts, the application of the prevention doctrine makes perfect sense in this case. I think one of the most important things to keep in mind in this case actually derives from Steve Sanford's testimony. And Mr. Sanford testified that when Mark Weitzel presented to him before the negotiation and execution of the agreement dated July 14 of 2000, which is the only agreement we're talking about here today, he said Sioux Valley and Dr. Weitzel were at a turning point. They were either going to go to war or they were going to work something out at that point. Dr. Weitzel was not entirely happy with Heart Partners. He didn't feel that things had been promised to him had come true. Sioux Valley obviously wasn't happy with Dr. Weitzel and didn't like some of his conduct. And that had all been discussed between Dr. Weitzel and Mr. Krabenhoff, the CEO. And at that point, Mr. Sanford said, we're at a turning point. And Dr. Weitzel can either go one way or he can go the other. And based on the conversation that had occurred between Dr. Weitzel and Mr. Krabenhoff, Dr. Weitzel determined to go do a fellowship. And Mr. Krabenhoff said, go do that and come back when you're done. And Steve Sanford said, okay, we're going to negotiate this agreement dated July 14 based on that understanding. If that wasn't the understanding that Dr. Weitzel was going to come back, I would have negotiated an entirely different agreement on Dr. Weitzel's behalf. If Sioux Valley thought they had good cause to terminate Dr. Weitzel's employment based on his conduct, it was known well before the agreement dated July 14 of 2000 was signed, and Sioux Valley could have terminated his employment at that point. It would have been better for all parties if that's what had been done. It wasn't done. And the reason it wasn't done is because Mr. Krabenhoff and Dr. Nickel, after talking to Dr. Weitzel, agreed he could do a fellowship and he could come back. And that's where the breach of contract occurs, and that's where the application of the prevention doctrine comes into play.
Well, both sides are arguing a lot of facts, which normally then would be a jury question.
I don't think so, Your Honor. There are essentially no facts in dispute here. The agreement is clear. The agreement is clear on its face. It is a four-page agreement dated July 14 of 2000 that says, on the opening page, that in the standard preamble language, now therefore in consideration of the mutual covenants herein contained and intending to be legally bound hereby, the parties agree as follows. It says in the concluding paragraph on page 8 that this agreement and the notes shall be binding upon and inure to the benefit of the parties hereto and their respective successors and assigns. It says it's a binding contract. Whether it is a binding contract is a question of law for the court to determine. And I don't think there are any questions of fact that relate to whether this is a binding contract. It has clear and definite terms.
I think, though, the facts that you're arguing go more to the breach.
I think, Your Honor, that Dr. Nichols' testimony resolves any issues about any other facts with respect to whether Dr. Weitzel was coming back to Sioux Valley Hospital. He testified candidly and forthrightly that he is not coming back to Sioux Valley Hospital. Put a little different way, Your Honor, if Mr. Patrick had not been so successful in deterring Dr. Weitzel from returning by what he said to Steve Sanford, and what he said is undisputed. We have his testimony, we have Mr. Sanford's testimony, we have their letters. If he had not been so successful and Dr. Sure. Weitzel had said, I'm coming back, according to Dr. Nichols' testimony, something else would have happened to prevent him from coming back, because the decision was that he was not coming back. And then you go to the application of the prevention doctrine, Your Honor, and Mr. Lang is correct that there's a sentence in the Johnson versus Cross case that says it can be a question of fact, but I don't see how it can be a question of fact where the conduct, the wrongful conduct of Sioux Valley that it operates to prevent Sioux Valley from enforcing the notes in this case is its breach of contract. And if there is a breach of contract, as a matter of law, there's no question of fact related to the notes. Your Honor, lastly, with respect to the fraud claim that Dr. Weitzel pleaded, if the court determines that there are questions of fact related to the validity of the contract, related to its breach, or related to the enforcement of notes, then there are clearly questions about fact about whether Dr. Weitzel was defrauded when the agreement dated July 14 of 2000 was negotiated and entered into. Dr. Weitzel's testimony and Mr. Krabenhoff's testimony are both clear that they discussed all of the issues outstanding at that point. They agreed that Dr. Weitzel could leave and return. The only reasons later given by Sioux Valley for not allowing Dr. Weitzel to return were reasons that were known at the time the agreement dated July 14 of 2000 was entered. If there are questions of fact about the agreement, there can't help but be questions of fact about the fraud claim, and in that case, Judge Teedy would have been incorrect in dismissing the fraud claim. Unless the court has any other questions, I'm about out of voice.
Okay. About out of time, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Lang, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm going to start where Mr. Moore ended with the fraud claim, which is the easiest claim, I believe, for this court to deal with. Judge Teedy was correct in granting summary judgment for Sioux Valley on the fraud claim. Mr. Moore and Dr. Weitzel made a judicial admission in their statement of undisputed material facts, which says the sequence is undisputed. While Dr. Weitzel was away at his fellowship, the physicians at Heart Partners, who themselves had no hiring or firing authority, decided they did not want Dr. Weitzel to return. And that is what occurred. The testimony is clear that in July of 2000, when these notes were being entered into and the discussions were ongoing, at that point Sioux Valley anticipated Dr. Weitzel returning. There were discussions about that. But when he was gone, referring physicians made it known that his conduct was such that they would try to refer around him, which is a major problem for a burgeoning practice. So it is undisputed that what occurred that prompted Sioux Valley to make known that Dr. Weitzel might not be welcome back is something that occurred after the July of 2000 agreement was entered into. There was no fraud in that respect. Indeed, it makes no sense that Sioux Valley would loan him $36,000, carrying him on life insurance and health insurance programs if they did not intend him back. Justice Meyer-Henry, I believe, is correct in noting that there seem to be questions of fact here. Indeed, the testimony between Steve Sanford and Kim Patrick is not completely harmonious about what was being said at that time. This court has recognized repeatedly that questions about the breach of a contract are generally questions of fact. In Johnson versus Cost, this court recognized that the application of the prevention doctrine involves questions of fact. There are questions of fact rife in this case that preclude Judge Tiede from granting summary judgment as he did to Dr. Weitzel. The prevention doctrine, however, does not apply here. There is not a condition precedent to which it is to be applied. That being the case, the notes clearly should be paid by Dr. Weitzel. These were not earned by Dr. Weitzel. They were not compensation for what he had earned. Rather, they were notes, some applied to his law school or his med school debt, some applied to his own personal debts, some that he said took the place of what he expected to receive from Elk City accounts receivables. These were not compensation, they were loans payable on demand. Finally, Mr. Moore read through some of the events of default under Section 5 of the July of 2000 agreement. He omitted, I'm sure unintentionally, Section 5A, which makes it a default and requires that the physician shall fail to pay, or excuse me, makes it a default under these conditions. Physician shall fail to pay as and when demanded or otherwise due any installment or principal or interest on the notes. It is undisputed that Dr. Weitzel has not paid a penny towards the notes that are at issue here. As a matter of law, this court should apply the principles of contract law to enforce the notes, and I believe should remand to a trial the issue of whether Sioux Valley has breached an agreement to agree under these circumstances. For all the reasons contained in the appellant's brief and reply brief, we ask for the relief as stated. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Wang. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.